Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, presented by TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour. I am your host, Shane Bacon. A happy Monday. It's U.S. Open Monday. We've made it. Excitement everywhere. Shinnecock Hills, Tiger, Phil, Jordan, Justin, Dustin, they're all here. And we're going to be there as well for Fox. We're going to be on your TV basically the entire week, starting on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You're going to see a lot of us, and you're going to see a lot of Shinnecock Hills, and that is the point. And I hope you're excited about it because we are fired up at Fox. It's going to be an enormous U.S. Open. There's nothing to battle with. No NBA Finals, no Stanley Cup. Baseball's kind of still in the doldrums of June. It's golf, baby. That's what you're going to get, and I hope you're excited. And instead of rummaging through your contacts to find someone who knows a member at Shinnecock Hills, bad news, not going to be able to play it anyway. You and your golf buddies can play Win Watch Golf and Country Club nearby and experience some major excitement. Wherever this message finds you, know that you can book tee times at thousands of other great golf courses across the country on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees, every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener here of the Clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. TEEOFFBACON on TEEOFF.com. And this one is going to be fun for you. This is Jack Druga, the head golf professional at Shinnecock Hills. I did this, if you remember, a couple of years ago when the U.S. Open went to Oakmont. And I've mentioned this a couple times, but I think there's about six courses that are, you know, if there was a rota for the U.S. Open, I think there's about six. I think there's Marion. I think there's Pebble Beach. I think there's Shinnecock Hills, Wingfoot, Oakmont, and Pinehurst number two. Those are the courses to me that I think about when I think about a U.S. Open. They play like it, they play different, but they're just this historic feel to it when you go there. And it's just exciting. It's exciting to get a chance to go to a William Flynn design. It's exciting to show the world that this golf course that we haven't seen since 2004. And it's been, you know, it was a completely different generation that took it on then. Granted, I know Tiger and Phil are going to be here, but you know, we're going to see, you know, Jordan Spieth manage this golf course and Justin Thomas and Jason Day and some of these young amateurs. So many amateurs were able to qualify and get through at this U.S. Open. It's just going to be a special week. And I know I'm excited about it, you know, getting a chance, the lucky opportunity to co-host basically half the U.S. Open, sitting next to Brad Faxon with Joe Buck and Paul Azinger on the other end. It's going to be a very special week for me. It's crazy to still think that I'm going to be talking while you watch the U.S. Open and Tiger Woods attempts to win the U.S. Open. It's pretty surreal. And so I'm blessed. Hashtag blessed. Before we get to the chat with Jack, just wanted to remind you, do you know that Sunday is Father's Day? I know it's kind of hard to believe that that's here as well. If you're tired of getting your dad a world's best dad coffee mug, get your dad a backpack instead. Surprise him this Father's Day with the Ogio Summit laptop backpack, complete with a dedicated padded laptop compartment and spacious front compartment with two accessory pockets inside, not to mention Tech Vault. Tech Vault, that sounds pretty advanced for a backpack. Perfect for sunglasses or small electronics. When he's on the road, your dad not only will be organized when walking into the office, but he will also look good doing it. I personally trust Ogio for all my bag needs. I think I've used an Ogio backpack now for about 3 years. Same backpack, no issues. Nothing's ripped, nothing's fallen off of it. It's awesome. And it has the Clubhouse logo on it. It's very, very, very spiffy. I trust him for all my bag needs. I think you should as well. Celebrate Father's Day by getting your dad, your husband, or even yourself a new Summit backpack. And why wouldn't you? Because we have a special offer, 40% off if you use the promo code Clubhouse before June 20th. 40% off. That's half off. I'm not a math major. That's pretty good. Ogio, the world's best bags. Do that. Your dad would love it. A new backpack if he travels or if he goes to work or if he goes to the office or he goes to the gym. I think it's a pretty smart present. Just because Ogio told me, I think it's very smart. All right, let's get to the interview. The head golf professional at Shinnecock Hills, Jack Druga, who played in the 1990 U.S. Open, who's hosting the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills for the first time under his head professionalism. So exciting chat, and you'll get a little bit more insight about Shinnecock. And we welcome into the clubhouse a man that spends his days at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club, the head golf professional there, Jack Druga. And Jack, I had Bob Ford on the podcast before our U.S. Open at Oakmont just to give people an idea of not just what to expect, but how much has gone into these types of championships. And so I appreciate you coming on. So my first question is this. I know you guys had I would say, a pretty brutal winter and a very wet spring. So just give us a layout of what Shinnecock Hills looks like, you know, 3 or 4 days before the best players in the world will take it on.
Yeah, Shane, you're right. We did have a brutal winter, and we had, you know, the sod project that we took on in September to make the fairways a little bit narrower for the championship. But to be honest with you, couldn't be better right now. Our conditions are just right. The fairways are perfect. Greens are healthy. The rough is really rough. It's a severe penalty now if you put the ball in the rough. Even the first cut is going to be a problem for the players. So all in all, I think we're really ready. The USGA is happy. I think they can do whatever they would like to the turf. Not much rain in the forecast the next 10 days. So yeah, we're ready, and everything is right about what we wanted it to be.
So one of the things leading into this U.S. Open in particular was the fairway widths. I feel like that has been kind of the hot topic, if you will, about Shinnecock Hills. They were really, really narrow for the USGA championships there before. Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw came in and did a great job of almost taking the golf course back to what it looked like with Flynn and the pictures and all that stuff, because that's kind of what a lot of these historic clubs are doing right now. So just can you take people through in kind of a 10,000-foot above view of what the project was, the ideas behind it, and why they did what they did? So if people see the U.S. Open, they go, why are the fairways wide? Just give people an idea of the reasoning behind it.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think the USGA, in a very thoughtful way, wanted to make accuracy important. They wanted the player to have to put the ball in the fairway, but they also wanted to give them a choice. So if you look at our fairway width, the longer you drive it, or the further down the fairway you force the ball, the narrower the fairway gets. So the player definitely has a choice. Lay back to what I would say a 260 to 280 area, where you'll have a very wide fairway, or force the ball up there a lot farther, 30, 40 yards further, but you'll have a smaller target, which makes sense. By doing that, Shane, we've kept the angles, the angle options, if you will. There's good sides of the fairway and not as good sides of the fairway to put your ball in because of the way the greens are structured. So they made it narrower for the guy that wants to challenge it, but they've also given the other player an option to set the ball back. And, you know, as everyone's watching this week, you'll see what I mean. There'll be a player in the fairway that'll have a very difficult shot, not because of the length, but because of the angle that they're given.
Yeah, the idea behind that, and I've mentioned the 8th a lot, but I feel like the 8th is such a good example of this, that the fairway's some 63 yards wide. But if you're on the right side, if you play back and you're on the right side, you're going to have a really, really tough shot to just keep it on the putting surface. And if you blow it down that left side over those bunkers and take it on, it opens the face of the green up. Angles and widths seem to be kind of the main talking point headed into this thing because, as you said, the more aggressive you play, if you pull it off, you're going to have a chance at birdies at Shinnecock, and if you don't, you're going to be playing for par like U.S. Opens, I think, kind of hope you will.
Right. 8th's a great example of just the way you described it. A long hitter that can get it over the bunkers down the left side is going to have a much easier shot than the player that, one, chooses to go the other way or can't hit it far enough to go the other way. So advantage long hitter right there, but also a smarter player.
I wanted to ask you, because I think it's a funny story, and it was a great story, what Rory McIlroy told you the first time he got on the first tee. What were his wording exactly on a 390-yard par 4?
Yeah, well, we were actually having lunch on the porch. We got the table right behind the first tee. Our clubhouse porch sits right there by the 9th green and the first tee. And Rory had never been here, and he was looking around and what hole is that? What hole is that? Asking questions, and he finally picked up on the fact that we were right behind the first tee. The members were teeing off, and he said, "Wow, that's interesting. A U.S. Open course with a drivable first hole." And I said, "Well, it's 389 yards. It's drivable. He's like, "Wow, really? It looks like you can just knock it on the green right here." So when he played, he hit it about 360 yards. He only had 30 yards left to the green. I don't know if he'll try that shot in the tournament. But yeah, that was a cute story. We had a couple of members sitting there, and I said, "Do you guys think this is a drivable par 4 like Rory does?" So These guys, these long hitters, are obviously seeing different angles than we are, because I'm worried about the 280 bunker out there.
Exactly.
I'm not looking at the green. So,
No.
Yeah,
and I know
good
the
story.
USGA grew a little bit of rough up there, left and right of the green. So if there is a wind behind the players and they do try to take it on, they have to hit it very, very straight. Rory was out there a lot at Shinnecock Hills. I know you mentioned Rory and some other players that seemed to not just come out there, but pick your brain and pick some members' brains and ask the right questions. Which players spent the most times at Shinnecock Hills over the last year, year and a half, and which players do you feel like were really interested in not just getting the perspective of a caddy or maybe the guy they're with, but a perspective for somebody like you who spent so much time there?
Yeah, well, I'll give you the list. Rory's probably played a half a dozen times over the past 2 or 3 years. Adam Scott, who's pals with a couple of our members, has also been out quite a bit. I did play with Adam a couple times last fall, right before the President's Cup. Ricky Fowler has played probably 5 or 6 rounds. So over the past couple of years, those are the guys that have been doing their homework, and I really think that that's going to pay off when it comes to not only the design of the golf course, but understanding the winds. The winds are going to change. If you get a morning time, you probably will have a different wind than the guys in the afternoon. So I think being aware of that will really help. You know, closer to the tournament, Tiger spent 2 days here, played, hadn't been back here since 2004, so he played 18 holes back-to-back, and asked great questions, took great notes, unbelievably high golf IQ, in my opinion. He sees things that, I'm not sure everybody sees, everybody notices. So he's definitely done his homework, and I think we'll see him do a little prep right here as we lead up to it. So, but yeah, I would say Adam Scott, Fowler, and Rory are the guys that played here the most over the past 3 years, and I expect them to do well because of it.
Yeah, and leading into this, I was going to ask you this a little bit later, but I figured it's a good time. We were doing a sectional U.S. Open show, just kind of recapping the sectional, and I asked Brad Faxon during one of the commercial breaks. I said, "Hey, I want to throw this at you. What's the player type?" Because we always get this, you know, this is a ball striking course, or this is, you know, somebody's short game. And I think it's a credit to Shinnecock that Brad didn't really have an answer. That there's a type of player that can do really well at Shinnecock. You know, a great iron player or such. Is there a type of player, if you will, you know, a mold of a player that you see being more successful at this golf course, considering, you know, this or that, you know, approach to the greens or around the greens?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's a player as much as it is a skill set. I think I've been kind of saying all along, I think there's going to be two requirements skill set wise. One, a player is going to have to be very good at pitching the ball off of tight lies around the greens. That's the shot you're going to have. If you miss a green, you will have a pitch off of a tight lie, and not an easy pitch. Some all tour players, I think, are good at it. Some are great, and then some are magical. And I think that's going to be a requirement, because with the winds that we're going to get, there's no denying it. They're going to play in the wind. Players are going to miss greens, and you know it's not that easy to get it up and down off those tight lies to our greens. So I would say that's going to be a definite skill set. And then I think the other skill set required is a player that does do his homework and get these angles picked out to shoot into the greens, because your chances to hit a green go up when you're in the right side of the fairway and you have a good angle. So, you know, that requires a pretty high golf IQ for the player to have.
And what are you most excited about? I know that the buildup, you know, people don't realize how much goes into these types of championships. It's not months, it's years, Jack. I mean, you've been dealing with this for a couple of years, if not longer. What are you most excited about this week? I mean, just getting to see it played? I mean, is there any one thing you're excited to see?
Yeah, Shane, I'm excited to see how the young players, the guys that haven't been here yet, like Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, those guys haven't been here. They've never been here. And I'm really interested to see how they attack the golf course, whether they take that option to lay it back into a wider part of the fairway or they force the ball up there. I'm really curious to see how they decide to play Shinnecock, because they'll have the option, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. You know, this is an old style golf course being attacked by young modern players, and these guys don't play courses like this very often, and I'm really curious to see how they handle it.
And it's called a golf club for a reason. It's not a country club. I mean, we visit country clubs a lot. Why is it a golf club? Why is it Shinnecock Hills Golf Club?
Yeah, Shane, this is golf. We don't have breakfast. We rarely have dinners. There's no tennis. We don't even have a television in our clubhouse, if you can believe that. I tell my pals that, and they think I'm making it up. We don't have a television in our clubhouse. So, you know, people are here to play golf. You know, they want to hit a few balls, maybe grab lunch, maybe grab a beer after the round. But they're here to play. There's nothing else to really do here. We have an old school clubhouse, an old school locker room, a little what we call the J Bar, where you can grab a beer inside or sit on the porch outside. But it's the definition of a golf club in my eyes. You know, this is all about the golf. So
yeah, and you're I feel like you're a perfect example of that. I mean, you're a guy that has played in four USGA championships, but your first golf lesson was at one of the golf clubs in the world, Oakmont. I mean, you grew up at Oakmont. I mean, you kind of learned under Bob Ford. I mean, your story is very, very interesting in that regard as well. I mean, you are a golfer at heart.
No doubt about it. I caddied at Oakmont when I was 14. Lou Worsham, the 1947 U.S. Open champion, was the head pro. Bob Ford was a young assistant, and I'm out there caddying for $7 a bag. And, you know, was a decent junior golfer and was nice enough to get invited by Mr. Worsham to work the range after I had caddied for a couple of years. So now, you know, I caddied at Oakmont, unbelievable place. I got to play on Monday. It wasn't unusual for me to play 45 or more holes on Monday. I just played until I couldn't see my ball anymore. And then Lou actually gave me my first golf lesson there. So can you imagine a kid like that who, you know, gets his first golf lesson from a U.S. Open champion at Oakmont? And then I was lucky enough to be the assistant there when I got out of school. So yeah, I've been around the U.S. Open feel and U.S. Open courses quite a bit.
We'll take a quick break to tell you that at Buffalo Wild Wings, we'll admit that we often go overboard with our limited time offerings. We just can't help ourselves. Takes our signature sampler just for $15. You get wings and three shareable options like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's an aptly named Over the Top Nachos. Over the Top, not good for golf. Very good for nachos. A literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecue, grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. Then top it off with our platinum margarita. Go overboard with us today at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. Buffalo Wild Wings, also a good place to watch the Fox coverage of the U.S. Open. Okay, let's get back to Jack. And you played in the 1990 U.S. Open, and you have a great story. Unfortunately, you didn't make the cut. I think you said you missed it by three, but you had something going early in your opening round. You said you looked up at the leaderboard, and sadly, it was before the days of the cell phone, because I think even if the USGA wouldn't have liked it, you'd have pulled the iPhone out and taken a picture of what you saw.
Yeah, big thrill. Teed off first round very late. I think it might have even been 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Medina in Chicago, and got off to a nice start. I got to one under par after four holes, and as I was walking down the fifth fairway, if you get under par in the open, you're pretty much on the leaderboard. If you're in the red, you're on the board. And my name was up there at minus one, right next to Jack Nicklaus's name, who was, I think, on 13 at the time. So we had my name and Jack's name at minus one on a U.S. Open leaderboard, and you know, way before cell phones, and nobody could get a picture. And I'm just like, I stopped in my tracks. I had my college teammate caddying for me, and I'm like, hey, check out that scoreboard over there. And you know, I took care of it pretty quickly. I three-putted five and six, so I got off there pretty quick. But I was up there for a while in the red at a U.S. Open right next to Jack. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, again, that's so sad. I'm sure when you close your eyes, the image is still there somewhere. But I mean, it would have been a great Instagram, if nothing else, to throw that up at some point. You know, people talk about the William Flynn design, and they talk about the routing at Shinnecock Hills, and I've heard people say it's the best routing in the United States. And so, you know, for people that don't know, there's not really a hole that goes the same way, and that's why it's so interesting, because it keeps the players guessing.
Exactly. If you look at a map of the golf course, which I'm sure is available out there somewhere, some way, you will see that no two holes run in the same direction. It's amazing what Flynn did. Literally, you don't have two holes going in the same direction. You know, there's two par fives. One goes in one direction, and the other one goes completely in the opposite direction. And I'm sure that wasn't an accident. So you're pretty much going to play one par five downwind and one par five into the wind, no matter what time of the day you play. So start with that. But again, if your listeners have access to that map, check it out. It's amazing. He built it so that you literally don't ever hit two shots on the golf course in the same exact wind.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I think about this, and I've been, you know, doing prep for the week, and I do find it just astonishing some of these old school designs and how, you know, it was 100 years ago and how impressive they are still today. I mean, this, they don't have access that the architects have today, and they still were able to basically use the land to make these championship style golf courses that still live up. You know, that's what I find so amazing is not only do they still live up, but they're some of the best courses in the country. I mean, do you still look back sometimes and go, I can't believe this is here? It's been here since the late 1800s.
Yeah, well, the club, 1891, the Flynn design, we started out as a 12-hole course where we had a mostly C.B. McDonald holes, and then the Flynn design in 1931 is really untouched other than adding length to the tees. We did flip the back nine, front nine, and we used to start on what is now the 10th hole, became the first hole. But really, the angles are all there. I mean, the sight lines and the angles are all there other than the new tees we built. There's very little change from 1931.
Is there any place better than Long Island for golf?
Well, I'm obviously partial. I grew up in Pittsburgh, but now I'm a New Yorker. I've lived now in the New York area longer than I lived in Pittsburgh, so I'm pretty partial. But I don't know. Forget the ones out here east. You know we've got Shinnecock National, Maidstone, Friar's Head. Now the kind of the new kid on the block is about 20 minutes away. I mean, those are just amazing, amazing, four amazing golf courses. I'm Maidstone as well. But you could go right down the Long Island Expressway and find great courses all the way from us to Manhattan that we get to play in the Met section. There's just some amazing golf out here. You know, you've got Creek, Piping Rock, Meadowbrook, Deepdale, amazing, amazing golf courses by the old great architects. And we know about them because we play our tournaments there. But, Long Island's pretty good. I'd be hard-pressed to find. Philadelphia's got some great courses, too. Hate to give Philadelphia a shot being a Pittsburgh guy, but Philadelphia's got an unbelievable lineup of courses that people don't know about. I mean, you could go on and on there. I'd rank it 1-2. I'd rank Long Island, Philadelphia 1 and 2. I'd probably throw Chicago in there. They've got some amazing courses, too, that I've been lucky enough to play. I'd put us right up there at the top. I don't know that there's a better area.
And Jack, you gave it a run to try to qualify for this U.S. Open. I saw your scores, but how did it go? I know you've been battling with the bad back, but you went out there, you played well, it looked like.
Yeah, my back was fine, Shane. I've described it as bringing a knife to a gunfight in Newbrook. You know, at 59 years old, and the way they set it up, one of the golf courses had a couple of par fives turned into par fours. I was playing from a different spot. I was telling my friends that my experience was that I'd drive it out there and I'd have about 200 yards left and I'd hit my hybrid and then I'd walk up 50 yards and I'd see all the divots where the other guys were playing from. And I knew I was in a little trouble there, but 75-75. I gave it a go. The USGA is nice enough to give the host professional an exemption through the local and play the sectional. And I really felt like that was a wonderful thing that the USGA does, and I wanted to go over there and give it a shot. But like I said, that was the definition of bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the golf course you got through back in 1990, correct?
I did. I qualified at Canoe Brook in 90. I think I shot 3 or 4 under and got in pretty clean. So, yeah, good memories, and I was really glad that I went because that sectional qualifying day is really one of the cool days in golf. You know, you've got everybody trying to make it. And I think interestingly enough, this year, 23 amateurs qualified for the U.S. Open. I know some were exempt, but we're going to have 23 amateurs in the field, which not 100% sure, but I think it's the most they've ever had.
It was crazy. You know, we were doing that show I was mentioning earlier with Brad Faxon, and you know, you said, you know, it's a cool day, and when you're preparing for a 10 p.m. show and you're trying to get notes on certain players, and then all of a sudden they make a bogey and they're not in the U.S. Open anymore, you know, and it's going back and forth, and is Adam Scott going to get in? Is he not? It is, you know, I mean, it's a long day for those players, but it's a lot of fun to kind of see the shuffling of the leaderboard. You mentioned the amateurs. There are, you know, golf has changed, I think, in the amateur game. I mean, you're seeing these players immediately come out of college and they're winning, you know, in their first year, their second year, they're winning majors. I mean, the best player in the world is Justin Thomas, who, you know, I mean, is an early 20-year-old player. I mean, won very early in his career. Do you think an amateur could play well enough to maybe finish in the top 10, top 15 at this U.S. Open?
Well, I will give you this. I've had a chance to play a couple rounds with Matt Parziali, the young guy from Boston who won the Mid-Am last year. This guy's got some serious game. He's big time good, and I hope he gets down and plays a few more practice rounds before we get to next Thursday. And then the college kids, Doug Gim, the low am in the Masters, played 36 holes here a couple weeks ago, doing some prep work. Awfully played with one of my assistants, and by all accounts, awfully good, obviously. But yeah, I think so. I think these guys are so much better now than when I was a college player and I was playing the amateur tournaments. I just think they're that much better, and they're absolutely fearless. I mean, we saw Justin and Jordan Spieth do great things while they were still in college. Justin and Jordan were making cuts in tour events when they were in high school, for God's sake. I mean, the quality of play for the top amateurs now is just so good. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see a top 10 finish by one of the amps.
And it's just confidence. I mean, there's a level of confidence where I think, you know, the two you mentioned, I mean, I think Jordan Spieth's probably the one that laid it out, but they see this and they think, you know, if I'm going to be great, I've got to come out, you know, guns a-blazing when I turn professional or even when I'm an amateur player. So I'm with you. I mean, I would not be surprised if an AM came out there and did it. And I, like you said, I think if there's an amateur that is a very good thinker on the golf course, I think they're going to have a chance to, you know, think their way around this golf course. So give me one hole at Shinnecock Hills that if you would say you would sell to a player, hey, you can have four pars for four straight days. And if they didn't accept it, you'd be like, man, you got no chance at this championship.
Easy answer, number 11, 150-yard par 3, down low, hitting uphill, trying to judge the wind. I mean, you've got to be so precise. A miss of that green, which is easy to do, could change around. It could lead to a bad score. Four threes on number 11. I've kind of been saying all along, the player that handles the stretch of 9, 10, 11 for 4 days very well, if you could get through 9, 10, 11 right around par, that would be amazing to me. And I think that would be a player that would probably wind up doing pretty well in the tournament. That's a tough stretch, 9, 10, 11.
And what's the hole that the players need to be aggressive on? I mean, what's the hole that you'd say, you know, this is, if you're a caddy, you're standing on the tee, you say, I mean, this is a hole that we need to at least give ourselves a good birdie look at?
Well, the par fives, Shane, you know, five is reachable for sure. Tough green. You're going to see some putts for eagles on five for sure. 16 completely depends on the wind. Our other par five completely depends on the wind because we've built a new tee that's pretty far back there. Into the wind, I'll be blown away if somebody could reach that green in two into the wind. But no wind or downwind, the longest of the long hitters will be able to get it, you know, either in the bunker or right by the green or on the green in two. So I would say score on those two par fives because there aren't many birdie holes out there other than the par fives. I just don't see it. So I would, you know, try to get the two fives, hold your own on the par threes because our set of par threes are very difficult. You know, and that would be a pretty good formula to shoot a good score every day.
All right, a couple more questions, then I'll let you go. First is, I'm going to give you three options for winning score, okay? Option number one, and I know you already mentioned there's going to be a win. Option number one is there's not really any wind, a little bit like Aaron Hills last year. you know, it kind of lays down maybe 5-10 miles an hour or something throughout the week. What's the winning score if it's a pretty mild wind Thursday through Sunday?
I would say 6 or 7 under par, unless a guy just gets unbelievably hot. I would think if you could play 4 rounds here in those conditions and be 6 or 7 under par, that would be an amazing score.
Okay, so now let's say just the normal wind, you know, normal conditions that you would expect to have, conditions that maybe the USGA, you know, plans for. Is it closer to around even, do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of a 3 to 5 under right in there. Normal turf conditions, normal wind. I would say 3 to 5 under. The guys are so good, and the top guys, somebody in the top guys is going to be on this week. And I think 3 to 5 under would be a good score under the normal conditions.
And is there any chance you're going to get conditions where an over par score would win this? I mean, is there any chance that this time of year you're going to get something 20, 25 miles an hour for a couple of days, or is that kind of unexpected?
Well, it could happen, I guess. It's not in the forecast for it to happen. You know, we have all these fancy, unbelievable 10-day forecasts out there right now. It doesn't look like we're going to get that kind of conditions. And I think the course, the way it's playing right now, is not going to be overly firm and fast. I hope it's firm and a little fast, but it doesn't look like it's going to get to that point. So I think unless we had 2 or 3 days of severe wind, it'll be around par. It'll be in that even par to 5 under. And if it somehow dies down, if the wind lays down for three of the 4 days or 4 days, then it could get a little deeper.
And what's your role throughout the week? I mean, you've been planning this for a long, long time. I know you're really, really excited about this. I mean, I got a chance to sit down with you and hit a couple golf shots. And, I mean, I can see it on your face. This is a very, very big week in your career. What do you do during the U.S. Open? I mean, I know you have obligations, but do you get a chance to sit back and enjoy it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're going to be – my staff and I are going to be running the practice tee. We'll be in charge of the practice area for the players. I hope to do a little practice round starting. I've got 8 of my ex-assistants coming back to Shinnecock who have worked here to help out in the practice round starting. That's going to be fun for me, and I know it's going to be fun for them as well. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. I don't know how much golf I'll actually get to watch other than the first and 10th tee and maybe a little television at night. I'll get the tape and watch it very, very closely after the tournament. I won't miss a minute of the telecast after the event. And maybe the last round, maybe I'll hang out there for the stretch, try to follow a little bit of it the last round, when the ranges, the practice tee is kind of calmed down. So, but I'm very excited. It's going to be great just seeing all my pals in the world of golf, who will be here this week, the players that I'm, particularly the young guys that I'm getting to know a little bit, and that's going to really be a fun week. I'm humbled and thrilled to be the head professional at my club during a U.S. Open week.
Well, Jack, I appreciate the time. I know you're excited. We're excited as well. Wrapping up Curtis Cup here on Sunday, and then I'm headed down there. I'll be down there on Sunday night, and first thing out Monday morning, I'm going to go tour it and see what it looks like different than I saw it 3 weeks ago. So I'm sure I'll see you out there. Like I said, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the insight. I know the listeners are going to love it as well. And, you know, hopefully we'll have an unbelievable week, as I think most people expect it to be.
All right, Shane. We'll make sure you come down and visit on the practice tee. And anything you need from us, just ask. We'll be here, and it's going to be an exciting week for everyone.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Many thanks to Jack Druga. I know he's a busy man, so I appreciate the insight into Shinnecock Hills. Great conversation. Hope you guys like that as well. We'll have a couple of more podcasts this week. I know I'm trying to get them in. I mean, we've got a lot going on and had a lot going on the last 3 weeks. So I'm going to try to push out a couple of more before Thursday starts. But just a reminder that instead of rummaging through your contacts to try to get tickets to come to the Shinnecock Hills or to try to play a golf course around Shinnecock, just take your buddies to WinWatch Golf and Country Club nearby, and you can experience some major excitement. Wherever this message finds you, know that you can book a tee time. Thousands of great golf courses across the country on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and you can do so with no booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every golf course, every tee time, plus as a valued listener to the clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TOFFBACON. And that's not all. That is not all, my friend. You want to save money? Save money on golf. You can also save money on a backpack and a present for your dad. If you're tired of getting your dad a World's Best Dad coffee mug, get your dad a backpack. You can surprise him on Father's Day with the Ogio Summit Lab Talk Backpack. I trust Ogio for all my bag needs, and I know your dad will too. Celebrate Father's Day. Get your dad, your granddad, or a friend of yours, or heck, get yourself a new Summit backpack. And special for the listeners of the Clubhouse podcast, you can use the promo code Clubhouse, and you'll save 40% off. Boom. Gone. Before June 20th, Ogio, the world's best bags. All right, get some sleep, rest up. It's going to be a long week of you sitting in front of your TV watching the U.S. Open. You better watch the U.S. Open. If you listen to this Clubhouse podcast, watch the U.S. Open. And by the way, since you've made it all the way here, if you're out at the U.S. Open and you see me in a golf cart or walking the course or carrying my suits between, you know, the compound and going up to the booth, I'm going to have a whole bunch of Clubhouse koozies in my backpack. Just yell at me, hey man, can I get a koozie? And I will throw you one. I even have some stickers in my backpack as well. Don't hesitate to reach out. I'll be excited to meet you, and I'll be excited to hand out some stuff. I've got a whole bunch of it. I had my wife send me about 20 more koozies because I ran out. So I am stocked up. So if you see me, make sure you do that. Have a great week. We'll be back with a roundtable discussion on Wednesday.